You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Till you wake up on your own, I wonder where you are, and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't
lie. I'm fucking motivated right now. Joining me is T.P. Lynch. What's up, Timmy?
Not much, Mac. Happy to be here again. Thanks for having me on.
How about Chris and Webster?
Webster. That is amazing.
Amen.
That is amazing. 250 pounds. My God.
He lost 250 pounds. Jeff Kenny joins us. Jeff, what's going on? Uh-oh. Hello, Earth to Kenny. Kenny.
How about now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right.
So he started emailing the show, and I'm like, this, and he's funny, right? Which always, you know, works with me, right? He's a funny guy, Marine. And then I hear part of the story. I'm like, what? And I don't know if you were listening to it, but he's in the hospital. So, you know, just shot, hey, what's going on, man? How's food? He sent me a picture of his lunch, right? And then it's like, how much weight have you lost? 250 pounds. He got up to 500 pounds.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And he's lost it. He's lost 250 pounds. Holy shit.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and he said, and again, the magic of reconnecting to our culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And listen to you fucking monkeys on a weekly basis. You chimps making chimp noises.
I gotta start listening. I need to lose 250 pounds.
No shit, man. You can, I'll give you his email,
at least,
man.
50 pounds. At least 50 pounds.
He said, yeah, if anybody needs help, I'll help him. He said his goal is, I want to say in the next year to pass the Marine Corps PFT.
Good.
Yeah. And I said, well, if you can't pass the PFT, we're not talking about maxing it. We're talking about passing it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
I said, you could do that. He said, I know I can. I said, all right, well, just we should get a video camera out there because nothing motivates like public humiliation.
For sure.
And that's the truth, right? Because we all know that the reason you got to stay in shape is because of that fucking belt on your alphas, right? Dress blue. Yeah, I mean, you look like the Pillsbury Doughboy with that son of a bitch. If we didn't have the, if we had the bus driver uniforms like the other branches do, then we'd be good to go.
Yep.
That's why the pink and greens will not last.
That's when the Army would, that's when they had great unis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just revised all their PFT shit, man. They should keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you don't look good. With that uniform, you've got to be in shape.
I got
to look good in that uniform.
Right. I used to talk about the tyranny of the belt, man. Oh, I need to buy a new uniform, honey. I need to buy a new set of alphas. Oh, fat man, why don't you buy a new set of running shoes and get your ass out there, right? And go be somebody. Go get some, devil dog. Like.
Motivating things. Like there's always the Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro arguments in Raging Bull. I can't see the TV, but your stomach in the way, you fat fuck. Oh, now you're going to look at me like that. You know what you should do? More fucking and less eating, and you have less problems upstairs than what be taking it out on me. Yeah, it was great. I can think of a million of them.
Oh, my God. It's so cool to hear Chris talking about, when you kind of lose your way like that, and all of a sudden there's things that help you remember who you are. And he was talking about, he said, I do have the DNA of John Bazelon, And I do have the DNA of Jason Dunham and Kyle Carpenter in me, the same DNA that went through door number four like everybody else, and I could do this. And you hear that, and you're like, fuck yeah. And I would tell you, I tell young Marines now, I just said it in Yuma the other day, and I said, look, man, Marines of my generation, we grew up in a world where there was discipline and structure, so the step in the Marine Corps is not a big step. You grow up in a culture nothing like that, and you choose the Marine Corps, and you see all those crazy videos on fucking YouTube, man.
Yep.
And you still choose it? Like, what are you guys, stupid? No, we're motivated. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. But, I mean, but it's that DNA. To me, that's what makes the Marine Corps different, right, is the mystique of our recruit training and phrases like, maybe you could be one of us, right? We don't say aim high, join us, come see the world, join us, right? Be all you can be. We don't say that. We say maybe you could be one of us, the few, the proud, the Marine.
Hey, you know why that works, though?
Why?
Because of the emphasis Marine Corps places on recruiting command. I mean, if you're a ground combat officer and you want to be a general, the fastest, the only way, for most of the way, only way is through a recruiting station command as a major. We select for that. No other service does that.
Yeah, but no, what does that have to do with our propaganda and how we attract people? That's
we attract a different we attract people for different reasons than the other services do. Yeah. I mean, right off the bat, that was the only point I was making.
Okay.
Because
okay.
You put guys out there who are like Mike Etor. You know what I mean?
Like Tim Lynch. Like
read the book. I don't know if you guys have. But.
Like Tim Lynch, like Jeff Kenney.
Yeah.
Yeah. All recruiting guys.
I have to tell you, but Tim hits on a good point there about the whole thing with the recruiting is, we had never had a dearth of people trying to get in. It was the standards that they couldn't make. And, the whole McNamara 100,000, it was a boom for the Marine Corps as far as the sheer statistics of it. Unfortunately, the type of people were getting in, you know, were ruining the Marine Corps. But, until we fixed it, General Wilson, General Barrow. But, you know, that's true. We do. You get a guy who he wants to be a better person,
right.
Not better educated, not just better equipped to do jobs, not just you know better off financially. He actually wants to be a better person. That takes a certain type of belief that there is the possibility that you can change your actual personality, or you can improve it.
You know? you can improve your circumstances, your lot
right.
in life, and the Marine Corps is a vehicle. That people have done that, and they see that, and they come seeking that. And let me just tell you, I mean, and we're all biased, but there's nobody that fights like we do. And it's because of the chip on the shoulder of all the people that join, right? And, I mean, half the time they're told by recruiters, yeah, we're probably not for you. What?
That's exactly right. When I had that job over in Afghanistan, I worked with special forces guy. You know, everybody, like the guy I went through orientation with was a guy who was, he just retired from Fish Special Forces at 20 years as a master sergeant. And then 3 days later, he's in orientation. And he was telling me, he goes, yeah, you know, we always joke about that. A lot of SF guys are former Marines, but we always say they send the Marines in somewhere, there's going to be a lot of dead bodies on both sides. He goes, because they latch on, they're there to fight, you know, and, you know, you never hear Marines say, or you shouldn't. I hate to hear that. Say, you can't kill your way out of this war.
Oh, yeah? Watch it.
No, we'll give it the old college try, though, goddamn.
We had, well, this is just in Afghanistan, 2010. Our dust-off crew was awesome. They were led by a former guy who was a former Army Ranger. And, you know, I'll tell you what, when you have people crashing in LZs, which means not helicopters crashing, when you have Marines being waited to be medevaced, and you're getting an updated status on them, and you're getting told stuff like, you know, vital signs, his breathing's getting weak, you know, that bird's got to get here now, but the LZ isn't cool yet, right? They're still, right? And then that air crew is listened to it via the forward air controller.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get told, we need you now. And they say, Roger, Oscar Mike, and they're inbound to the LZ. And it isn't cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you know, they risk every one of those dudes is risking their lives for somebody that's on the ground. take, I mean, it gives you goosebumps and takes your breath away. And you're watching this thing and watching this thing, and you're like, come on, guys, come on, guys. And you know, and then when it's inbound, right, the Marines, you know, they step on it, they suppress as good as they can. But, you know, at the end of the day, those guys put themselves, I mean, they did this repeatedly in AO Montezuma in 2010, 2011. So Thanksgiving rolled around, and we had a special meal made for them. Did tell them, right, we had a special meal made for them. And then our guys went over and took it to them and said, hey, we just want to, we made this plaque for them, and everybody signed it, and they were blown away.
Hey Mac, was this an Army outfit, a Pedro outfit?
Yeah, no, this is an Army dust off outfit.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, and so they came back over about a couple weeks later, and their doc, a couple of the docs were there, and they said, hey, we just wanted to ask a question. We're like, what? They're like, what do you do to these Marines? And we're like, what do you mean? And like, they get to the operating room, right? And the first thing they look at us and say is, Doc, you can't send me to Germany. Okay, now this is like part of a leg blown off, maybe a half leg blown off. What they're arguing with us because they know if they go to Germany, they're going back to the States.
Right.
He goes, they're standing like, what do you fucking do to them? Because we worked here, you know, in the casualty process for the last 10 years. We don't have that conversation with everybody else. Marines, though, they get there and you argue with them. Then we just say they hate them and we pack their asses off. And General Furness, he would tell stories, right? So, I mean, you get these.
Bill Mattis did hold their parents hostage, but that's
that's a different story. But General Furness would, you know, like if he was around and we had casualties inbound, right, he would head over to the cache. And he tells a story of this one Marine. They bring him in, and I don't remember what happened. He had part of his foot blown off or his foot crushed by an IED that didn't detonate the whole way. It's called a low-order detonation. So it essentially crushes his foot, right? And so, right, so they bring him in, right, and he's cussing, right? God damn it. And then they throw him on the table, and now it's like a NASCAR crew, right? They're cutting his gear off, they're cutting all of his shit off, his clothes, right? And they're taking vitals, they're looking at his body for signs of internal bleeding, right? That may kill him, that isn't like obvious right now. And then somebody sticks a finger up his ass, right? Cause, right? Looking for internal bleeding, right, Timmy?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Right? And then,
that's what they say.
Right, so General Furness or Colonel Furness was standing there, and this kid yells, "God damn it!" And you know, and Dave looks at him and says, "Are you all right?" And he goes, "Sir, I think I just got sexually assaulted." Right now, this is he just been IED'd for God's sake, right? And Dave looks at him and says, what are you talking about? He goes, I don't know who just violated my asshole, but somebody did, and I'm not happy about it. And he said, and then Joe Furness said, where are you from? He said, I'm from Columbus, Ohio. Now, those are like magical words to Dave Furness because he's an Ohio State guy, right? He said, you're an Ohio State fan? And the kid says, yes, sir, did they win today? He said, no, they got their asses kicked. And he goes, fuck, that's the third fucking horseshit thing that's happened. First I get this ID, then I get sexually assaulted, and now Ohio State loses. And then he wheels on the dock and says, Doc, you can't send me to Germany. And then Doc looks at him and goes, sedate him right now. Sedate him right now. But, I mean, it just, you know, those stories are, I mean, and you hear it from other services, right? Arguing with the doc, like, Doc, don't send me to Germany, because if you do, then I have to go home.
Yeah. Right?
And so, pretty amazing. So, yeah. And it's that DNA that you hear a guy like Dave talk about losing 250 pounds, for God's sakes, and going to run the PFT. I mean, that shit's awesome, man. I love that stuff. So, anyway.
Yeah, and that story of not wanting to be medevaced back from the rear, that's consistent in World War II and Pacific, and probably before that.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. The all right, now Timmy, you wrote a piece in tell everybody your free range international shit.
Oh, the Free Range International is a blog I started in 2008 when I was in Afghanistan, and I occasionally still blog, update it, but it's got a lot of stuff on it from a long time ago.
Yep. My picture's in there.
I'm in there.
It is. Yeah. Mac's on it. Mac's in there. Dave's in there. Paul's in there. All you guys are in it.
Yeah. Representing. Yeah. What, hey, I went to Las Vegas last week. Holy shit, man. What a great, great time I had. Yeah, and again, no, Marine Wing Support Squadron, the guys who run the airfield at Pendleton, have a former infantry sergeant major and a logistician as their CO. You know how you can tell a good unit when you see it, right? I mean, the way they, as good of a color guard as exists in the Marine Corps. And they were out there practicing for hours. But anyway, I had an awesome time. But I want you to kind of give us a summary of the article, the new thing you did in Free Range, and then I want to kick it around a little bit.
Sure. And I was talking about Afghanistan. A couple of things happened on Monday that were quite positive. One of them was the release of two American university professors, one Australian, the other American, who were pinched in 2016, I believe, on the way to the Kabul airport. And I no doubt held by the Haqqani clan in somewhere outside of Maranshaw, but they were exchanged for three senior Taliban guys. This was something in which the government of Afghanistan was involved. And that's obviously a positive step forward. And at the same time...
Wait a minute. Why is it a positive step forward? Other than these guys are free, I get that. But, I mean, what other significance of it other than their own personal freedom?
That the government of Afghanistan was involved and coughed up three senior Taliban guys, and this wasn't something that was ramrodded through by the Americans. So we have talks, you know, Kabul. I don't know how much we facilitate them, but apparently they were talking directly to each other, which is what our goal has been. Since the very start, if you'll remember, the Taliban refer to the government of Kabul as the puppet government.
Right.
I contend that you could refer to the Taliban as Pakistan's puppets, but they don't do that. They don't play that way. Yeah. But apparently, and then later that day, over 600 fighters and their families from ISIS-K or the Daesh in Nangarhar province surrendered to the Afghan security forces. They coughed up all their weapons and ammunition. They asked for basically the Pashtunwali Melistema or to be settled and to become productive Afghan citizens. No harm, no foul. You got to figure 80% of that ISIS crew was not non-Afghans. The rest being the Muhammad tribal guys mostly. They'll go back to Kunar. The non-Afghans, I don't know what they're going to do with them. I imagine they're going to move them away from the Torkham border, because that's the most important international border in Afghanistan. But that these are positive things that we had very little to do with, as far as I'm aware, which indicates some talking between Afghanistan and the Taliban, and that's what we've been trying to get them to do for a long time.
Interesting. Why? I don't know how much you read about the ISIS thing, but it said that they were isolated and were being starved by, I want to say, combined actions of both the U.S. Afghan coalition in concert with the Taliban. Did I read that right?
Yes. So if you look at Achin District, at it kind of there's a portion of Pakistan that comes in behind the mountains that Osama bin Laden got through, the White Mountains, right? And it's called the Parrot's Peak. It sticks all the way into Logar or Logaman Province. And that Parrot's Beak region allows the Taliban access out of Paktia, Loya Paktia area, to come right across. And they did this in 2017. They came in there and cleared out ISIS once in one friggin' day. They had a mass uprising and drove them all out, only to, of course, the Taliban then went back to where they came from. And the ISIS came back and grew even more more significantly.
Okay, now hold on. Let me have you pause. So if I'm looking at the map of Afghanistan, right, Osama bin Laden up in Tora Bora, right, up in the north, the northeast corner of Afghanistan, right, that's the region you're talking about.
Right, and if you see where Pakistan sticks in, there's like a Parrot's Peak in there. right. of Pakistan land that sticks in there. You see what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. So with the special forces, our special forces, because that's where they have been fighting, with our special forces and the Afghan special forces, they've sealed it off from the Afghan side. It looks like the Taliban came in behind them through that Tora Bora complex, exactly through there, and sealed it off from the Pakistan side. And remember, the ISIS-K guys started as Pakistani Taliban, TTP, trying to get away from the Pakistani Army's Operations Khyber 1 and 2. They came in two waves. They settled down. They bought peace. They didn't mess with the locals. They didn't mess with the Afghan security forces. And they put a damper on Taliban activity, and everybody liked it. They would go across the border and mess with the Pakistans, but the Afghans were good with that.
Okay, so hold on. I want you to explain ISIS-K. What does that mean?
Okay, it's ISIS. It's a franchise of ISIS. Khorasan is the traditional name of that area, in which Pashtunistan has been. There was this Khorasan group, allegedly, I think was a creation of it's a term used amongst the Pashtun to denote their homeland. So when these Pakistan Taliban came over, the Afghan Taliban weren't exactly down with these guys too well. They just decided to declare allegiance to ISIS for what I have no idea why. That originally weren't a problem. Then they became a problem, and then they became an intractable problem to the point that I've been getting panicked phone calls from guys in Jalalabad, you know, that are asking me to help them get out. And I'm like, there's not much I can do, brother. I mean, what do you want? It's quite a dramatic thing for Nangarhar province, which is the most important province economically, trade-wise, in that country. That Torkum border is 85% of Afghans' trade comes through there. So it's not a cool place to be having an insurgency.
Torkum. That's the other side of the Khyber Pass, you know, Mac.
Yeah, that's exactly. You could look that one up in your history book.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's interesting. It's interesting. It also kind of alleviates some of the pressure on the United States. Remember, we've been saying we got to make sure Al-Qaeda and ISIS don't flare up. It looks like ISIS just got taken care of. And I don't know why Al-Qaeda would move out of Pakistan. It seemed to be pretty safe there. So I think this takes some pressure off or gives some maneuver room to the United States. I just don't know how much.
Al-Azad still up there for us?
I'm sorry?
Al-Azad?
Al-Azad is still the presidential envoy. He has been absent from the news cycle. He was not evident in any of this recent news. I suspect when they come back and make another pass of it, they're gonna do the horse trading, and whatever they agree to, if they don't stick to it, President Trump has already shown he'll pull the wool out right out from under him if they do something stupid. Although I don't know that one guy getting, I don't know that was what was really going on, but that's good.
I thought the whole approach was bullshit, to be honest with
it
you.
Might have been.
And I don't know that the Khalilzad, I don't know that was his idea, but we're going to negotiate with the Taliban and the puppet government not going to be involved. I mean, come on, man. That's bullshit.
It's Vietnam. It's Vietnam all over. Paris again.
I mean, the whole point is to not be explicit across the board. You know, the whole point is to let the thing work. You can't just constantly be publicizing every twist and turn in negotiations.
Right.
You know, I mean,
but Jeff, how does it work if the Afghans aren't a part of it?
That's what I mean. I don't know if that's true. They're not a part of it.
Oh, that's what we're advertising.
And the other thing is, keep in mind, Khalilzad was instrumental in the ascension of Karzai and the implementation of the voting system that has crippled Afghanistan. That was predicted when he did it would cripple Afghanistan. It wasn't like this was rocket science or rocket surgery, rather. And so Khalilzad has a vested interest in trying to set things right.
Wait a minute. What the fuck is rocket surgery?
Oh, that was me being funny. I was trying to be like an entertainer.
Norm Crosby. You were going Norm Crosby.
Rocket surgery. my point being that Khalilzad has a lot to make up for because a lot of that mess he was instrumental in creating, and it appeared to the observers at the time single-handedly so.
Yeah, that speaks well for him because most of those guys just fuck shit up and walk away.
and write a book and make millions of dollars. That's how you do it.
Yeah. So that's Paul Bremer and Paul Bremer and fucking Don Rumsfeld. That's how they're.
Yeah, all of them. Dick Cheney, right? They're all writing them.
Yeah, right.
Okay, everybody, shut the fuck up, all right? Do you see that whole boiling cauldron over there? You lit that bitch off, you idiots.
Yeah, right.
Wolfowitz, hello?
Oh, that guy. Keep ripping out those names, man. They're like, they should, I mean, to me, they're like right up there with Adolf Eichmann. And they're like, they're not,
I know.
They're not tough enough to be bad. They're just.
Did you guys see Tucker Carlson shred Max Boot the other night?
No.
Oh, yeah. And that's disappointing because I like that. I mean, the Savage Wars of Peace, a great book, you know? And
I
Max
so too.
Wrote, turned into a schmo, man.
What? Okay, I want to ask you this. The president has been, right, giving clemency and some other shit. I want to talk about the UCMJ, right? The UCMJ doesn't, like, is being annihilated. The Navy can't do anything. The CO of the Fitzgerald is going to retire at the same rank that he wore when that ship crossed a major shipping lane at 22 knots, right? With neither first night out at sea under his command, neither he nor his XO on the bridge when they were doing this, and seven sailors die. He doesn't pay, right? And we just seen the whole fiasco.
That's not because of President Trump, right?
No. We just seen the fiasco of in my opinion, the Gallagher court-martial, right? These young SEALs say, look, we were shooting warning shots so he wouldn't be able to kill people, okay? And you told us to come forward. They come forward three times before, and then they threaten, if somebody doesn't take this to somebody, we're going to go public with it. So this boils out from it, okay? And then he's convicted of a lesser charge. He's reduced. The president restores him. Blah, 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 blah. Now there's clemency orders for, what, in three different cases. The SJAs are being investigated, right, out in San Diego. That system is being investigated, right? And then you have the incident with 1-5. A military judge says, yeah, everybody got their rights violated. And so here's my general article question. Doesn't the UCMJ, isn't it supposed to promote good order and discipline in the United States military? When did we get the UCMJ confused with the American, the liberal American justice system?
And yeah, there's definitely a conflict between the lawyer community and the leadership community. And some leaders are on one side and some are on the other. And these guys are, they're law to themselves. And vengeful. They're the same as a lot of the prosecutors we have. They're looking for scalps, and they're the ends justifies the means types guys in too many situations. I think that's bled over into a lot of military stuff, and that's a shame because now you can't tell, you know, what's like you named off like four different cases, Mac, and I'm on different sides with almost all of them.
Right.
The kid who was the Army soldier who had his guys fire on the motorcycle dudes. I can't remember his name, Lieutenant.
Right.
But he just got Trump just gave him a pass. My partner, when I was there and working for Wexford, it was a military guy, which was me, and then the cop guy, which was a guy named Bill Carney, hit gratis. He was working his ass off for that guy, you know, getting statements, working, you know, getting a hold of people in Kandahar area and stuff like that. So, but I'm with you on this. I'm like, there's a struggle going on between, you know, what these things. The UCMJ wasn't even used by us until 1951. It was ratified in 1950, and 1951 we started using it. And before that, they just had the Articles of War, which covered the stuff. And so, but it's been, I really believe, it's been perverted because of, I hate to say why, I don't know why, but I mean, there's a letdown in the idea that we all come to, no matter what your
are used to having some things. There's some things that just aren't done. I think that's breaking down. You know, like they don't borrow money from theirs.
What is that?
You know what I'm saying?
No, we couldn't hear you. It sounded like a jet engine got lit off behind you.
No, nothing happened here.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyways, I'm just saying, you know, there is a struggle going on, I believe, in the military justice system.
Oh, my God, it's a shit show. I mean, yeah. Neither the CO or the Fitzgerald or the McCain ever faced charges. Right?
Yeah.
The officer of the deck, they were not even going to court-martial the officer of the deck on the Fitzgerald. The tactical action officer of the Fitzgerald, she was down, right? And she did not communicate the entire shift with the, and she's supposed to fight the ship, right? With the bridge. Did not communicate, was doing paperwork down there. I mean, you know, and you read these investigations, and then Admiral Richardson, he's rolling around the world making comments about the case, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, well, nobody could be disciplined now. Like, are you shitting me? And then the thing with 1-5, it's like, okay, we've got 40 guys, or wait, it was between 20 and 30 that were detained, I think, in two separate investigations that were ongoing that culminated simultaneously. And they had a battalion formation, and these guys got called forward, right? And then they got arrested. And now they're saying, oh, their rights got violated. They were involved in human trafficking and drug dealing, right? So,
yeah, see how it shakes up. See how addictions happen. And here's the thing. I mean, there's ways to do things. Battalion formation and then yanking these guys out. Whose idea was that? You know what I'm saying? I mean, whose idea was that? Did the regimental commander know? I mean, it's hard to know. You know what's going on here. Who's fucking taking responsibility for that decision? Because if they just went and quietly got these guys out of squad bays, you know, from the chow hall and stuff like that, I don't know. It's obviously that they were trying to use. They're trying to send a message. And in most cases, I agree. Like, I agree that NJP should be in front of the whole company in some cases, you know? But I don't know. You just don't know the
ins
and outs.
I don't know. And again, from the article I read, I don't know if quote-unquote detaining them / arresting them, you know, in front of everybody, you know, it was the issue. Or if it was comments that people made.
Yeah.
Right? But, yeah. But again, I to me, though, it's like, well, now we're going to get the X-Acto knife out, right? And mm-hmm. with all this bullshit like the civilian world, the UCMJ exists because we cannot have human traffickers in our midst. We cannot have drug dealers. And,
right.
And again, so you got your rights violated. Too fucking bad, okay? Are you guilty or not? You're fucking guilty. Sorry. Boom. Right?
Right, absolutely.
Go the fuck away, right? Yeah. And if a civilian court wants to reverse that and give you your benefits back, we don't give a shit. Just go the fuck away.
It's like this, man. That's true. I mean, if that's what it is, I'm all over it. But that might not be what it is.
Right.
Like, it might be there's, like, three guys that are human traffickers and, like, 17 or 18 guys that they're just leaning on to try and get more dirt. I'm not saying I have nothing, you know, nothing to back that up, but I just don't trust this shit anymore.
Right.
Because, like, everything from this guy, you know, from the way the New York, the way they go after criminals even is almost criminal. I mean, how long was that guy Whitey Bulger on the street strangling people and pulling their teeth out and selling drugs and shit, blaming it on that fucking mafia here and there, and they're putting these guys in jail who ain't really angels themselves. But it was all bullshit, and it was protecting this guy. And he killed at least 19, probably more. And so, and that's not an isolated incident with these dudes. The same thing happened in New York, you know, with this guy in Scarpa. It happens everywhere. I mean, I think. Not everywhere all the time, but it happens too much. And the reason is, I think, is because you get, you know, these guys, they get promoted by getting convictions. I think they decide who they're going to go after, and then they make the evidence fit.
Well, here's what I don't understand. And Timmy, hop in here. Well, go ahead, Timmy, and then I'll.
No. I just wanted to add something, and that was a speech that the Attorney General made in the Federalist Society,
in which it was a direct attack on the progressive style of government, in which he enunciated why there wasn't a powerful executive, and was very clear with examples in how the power of the executive is being constantly eroded by a judiciary branch that was never supposed to play the role of mediating between the legislative and the executive.
Right.
It was never their intention. And so it starts at the very top, at the federal level, when you've got what the hell did Mark Levine call him, the something in black, that you have an imperial class that is inserting itself into clearly executive branch prerogatives on the basis of that they have better judgment, or they think this or that is. That's where it starts, and the military justice system is a reflection of the civilian justice system, and there's a gigantic imbalance in what those legislative and judicial branches should be doing. That goes in the military too. That's my guess on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Yeah, what's a judge except a lawyer with a dress on? I mean, it's like, you know. I don't.
That might be a gross simplification, but I understand where you're going with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like.
Yeah, and the other part is, I'm reaching back to an article I read by James Webb before he became a Democratic senator, written about the co-ed when they made the academies co-ed. That happened, I believe, in 1975. Do you remember why? The answer is there is no reason why. There was never a reason why. The Democrats came into Congress. They decided they wanted to have women at the academies because it's a free education. But the academies were integrated. Webb would tell you that it started right there, because now you've got institutions that no longer serve the purpose for which they were designed.
Explain that point. That they no longer serve the purpose they were initially designed for.
The academies were designed to provide professional officer corps to the military. They were not designed to graduate large numbers. When West Point stood up, there was no engineering curriculum in America. The Naval Academy stood up again. Heavy engineering, heavy nautical. When you graduated from the Naval Academy, you knew math and how to work, you know, but it wasn't a liberal arts education. It wasn't anything like that. That's what they were designed to do. That all changed when they started to gender integrate, and they started to dilute the course material to make it more interesting to the students, because the initial students that joined up failed because they were asked to meet the previous standard. And we know that we hear every time that we go through this thing, whether it's Tailhook, whether it's women in the infantry, the standards will never change, but we all know that they already have changed. They always change. They have to change. It's the only way it works. And I think that's where it starts.
So let me ask you a question. One of the things that when I talk to, and I know some relatively prominent guys who defend service members, right? And what they'll say is, you can't believe the way these guys overreach for shit, right? Now, and one of them used a case that has yet, it's going to be a general court, but it's the Staff Sergeant Melger murder in Mali.
Right, right. The special forces and SEALs.
Right. You have a SEAL and then a guy named Dadolph and a gunny with a hyphen. I want to say Martinez something, you know, hyphenated last name. Right now, and he said, look, the bottom line is that this is manslaughter, okay? They did not go there with the intent to murder him, okay? They had been drinking, they were stupid, and they were pissed. He said, but they're charged with murder. I want to say first or second degree murder. He said, the problem is these guys aren't seeking justice. He said, and so when you see these cases come to market, he said, it's crazy what they're doing. And he said, and it's corrupted NCIS, who then goes looking for the evidence to support these gross charges. And he said, so he was telling me, he said, the system's corrupt. And he believes that it started at Haditha.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. I think it started before that.
Well, he would say because these things got so high profile in an internet social media world, right?
That's probably true.
And he said so what I believe is these guys think they have to. They have to charge like this in order for them to acquit themselves well in the eyes of the public.
You know, connected to that though, Mac, is it's like what you just mentioned, the social media and the rise of the 24-hour news cycle and stuff.
Right.
It's caused this like firestorm, like the old, you know, like the way we used to bomb German cities to cause a fire with this mixture of explosive and incendiary bombs. It's like it's a firestorm of a frenzy, you know, of information must be gained. And I think a lot of it doesn't encourage deep thinking because it's so fast. So consequently,
well, you know, Jeff, let me ask, here's what I think. I think that what it discourages it discourages pursuit of the truth.
Right.
And that's what to me I find so disturbing because I was on here yesterday talking about there's no doubt in my mind. You know, now I've done this for going on 4 years. How long does it take to get a PhD?
Well, I mean, it usually takes about 3 years.
Okay. All right. So
if you count all of college in, it's about 12 years, or at least 9 years to get a PhD.
So
undergraduate.
So I'm approaching my PhD, and I would tell you that, you know, you look at suicide and the destructive behavior that is so rampant in our culture, right, and also in the military. It's not they're not mental health issues. They are not bipolar. They're not schizophrenic. They're not manically depressed. They may be in very, 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 very few instances. They are overwhelmed by life from a culture that doesn't do discipline, doesn't do consequences, and as a result, doesn't teach their young how to overcome adversity and deal with this shit. And
the reaction to a suicide or suicide ideation will not be scorn / contempt like it used to be. It will be, oh, you're a victim, you can't help this, blah, 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 you're sick, you need help, you know, we're here to help you. And so it's
well, and I don't think that's wrong. I don't think we should go back to scorn and contempt, right? But here's what I'll say. So the truth is that I believe it, and that's why you can make the good news is that we can change that. We can tell them the truth, look them straight in the face, and say, "I'm going to tell you the truth, and if you don't like it, I don't give a fuck." This is the truth that comes out of our culture of what it is to deal with adversity and trauma. Right? And I'm going to tell you that if you embrace it and you help other people, you'll fundamentally change your life. And guess what? Oh, shit. It fucking works. Because they got the same DNA as people had in previous generations. They'll respond to the same shit. But if you don't tell them the truth and you bullshit them, right, they're lost. They're lost. And so to me, when you watch this stuff, you know, does it take moral courage instead of charging, you know, this bullshit charge of murder? And this is what the lawyer told me in the Melger case. Everybody knows the charge is bullshit. Everybody does. But this is the charade we're going to play in public. And then to what end? Why isn't the prosecutor charging, you know, the appropriate crime?
Mm-hmm.
But you see it layer after layer after layer after layer after layer all over the military justice system that it just doesn't work anymore. Whether it's some admiral running their mouth and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, can't get a fair trial. Why don't we change the venue? Where haven't they heard of it? So they can't get tried at Pendleton because the jury pool is corrupt or whatever. Let's send them to Diego Garcia. We'll get a jury that doesn't know shit about this, right? I don't know, man. Good order and discipline is important.
Well, how many flag officers have been fired for screwing this up?
Which one?
For screwing anything up.
Any of them. I mean, what you're talking about seems to me starts at the flag officer level Because are they not the convening authorities, right? I mean, this is they're responsible for these things. I don't. Unless the prosecutors are just running amok on very loose guidance, but I've never known that to be the case.
You've never known.
So that. How many guys have been held accountable for being knuckleheads about screwing this up?
Well, let me give you an opinion. Right? Here's what I see. We have a problem at the general officer level in the United States military. And I've said this before to you too, and I'll say it again. Right? General officers, a lot of conformists. Right? I can tell you relative to mental health, they hide behind behavioral health people. The last thing any of them is going to do is step out in front and say, sorry, I disagree. Here's what we're going to do. Right? Or at least here's part of what we're going to do. And you see this over and over and over again. When the experts say one thing, you don't hear a general officer stand up and say the other thing. They don't say shit if they have a mouthful of it. Right? And I mean, again, we go back to General Furness. He says something that everybody knows is true. Nobody else will say a word in public about it. Nobody.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and so now they're going to stand up.
That's part of the representative form of government. That's the type of military guy they want. Because everything, they ruthlessly cull out the rest.
Well, you know, you're right, Jeff, and I think, and I'll tell you what, I was talking to a friend of ours the other day, and I said, I think there ought to be 10% of the generals, right, that are loudmouth, you know, that just come off safe quick. And I think that should be, that's institutionally important. Because otherwise, the logical extension of that is Tommy Franks without, right, phase four, clearing his head in either Iraq or Afghanistan and then saying, all right, boys, let's go.
You know what? I get the distinct impression those guys don't spend a whole lot of time chatting amongst themselves.
What does that mean?
You know what I mean? And because it's competitive. I mean, they're up at the, you know, you're getting up the two-star. Now you're getting into some serious cutting and culling. With some serious responsibilities for those that
you know,
stick around.
And if that's the case, shit can every fucking one of them because
And I think that's a problem. That's what I was going
to. I agree. Because they're competitive. They're competitive.
Yeah.
You're a general, man. Tell the truth. Do your fucking job for the nation.
Right. And I think that's a big problem. It's a problem that has so many, you know, sources to it. It's hard to know where to start.
Well, again, I go back to Tommy Franks. You read McMaster's Dereliction of Duty and you read other things that they didn't have phase four in either Iraq or Afghanistan clear in their heads. And,
right.
And the fucking thing that we were supposed to fucking learn out of fucking Vietnam because of the fighting that Tim's uncle and his dad did. I just told a story about your uncle, you know, the other day, you know, about, you know, I'm interviewing Tim's uncle. Here and we're talking about his career and he said and I said so you came back from Vietnam and where'd you go? He said well I went to I did recruiting in upstate New York. I said oh really? And he said yep. And I said how long were you there? He said well I short toured. I was only there for 2 years. And I said oh really? Why? He said well I did over 100 CAICO calls as a recruiter. And then he kept going. And I said hold on. Did you say over 100? He said, yeah. 1968, 1969, I think. We were 67, 68, or 68, 69. I said, over 100. He said, yeah. I said, I know guys who run from doing one of those, and they're brave guys. They don't want any part of that. And he said, it was horrible. So I called the monitor, and I said, you've got to get me out of here. And he said, I got nowhere else to send you except Vietnam. And Tim's uncle said, I'll go. And he went back to Vietnam. Rather than do fucking CAICO calls, he went back to Vietnam.
Yeah.
I would have told
you. Yeah, I'll tell you right. Nothing changed about the fundamental problem of Vietnam. Didn't change. It just got worse. I mean, to me, one of the fundamental problems is okay, we got this war. We're not going to be allowed to bring it to a decisive conclusion because we're not going to go across that border. So then what do? We make the best of it. Make the best of it for a career. So you got battalion commanders in there for 6 months, sometimes less, getting their ticket punched. And the same thing, all the way up the line. And then we get to Iraq and Afghanistan, same fucking thing. They realize that no one's going to do anything decisive to bring this thing to a conclusion. They're not going to put any more guys in there in the case of Iraq. And then they decide, you know, Afghanistan, we could do some of this coin stuff here. Everybody get their ticket punched. Everybody get a bronze star. Everybody's a combat vet. And nobody, almost nobody really is. They're just doing a police job in a place that's dangerous, you know?
Yeah, but how do you, when you read General Johnston's comments about, I now have to go to my grave knowing that I failed to live up to my responsibility as the Chief of Staff of the Army. You read that in McMaster's book, that's like, holy fuck. And if you're a
General Johnston.
Right, what's that?
Harold Johnston, right? Yeah.
Oh, man, you read that and it's like, holy shit, man. How'd you like to end your life on that one?
Yeah.
And
this guy, Frank's guy, he's thinking, you know, this is about a 2 or 3 year thing. I'm coming to the end of it. This is going to be somebody else's problem. The phase four part, you know? And so he didn't do shit to fucking prep the guy. It was the next guy, Sanchez. You know what I mean? And so, you know, that's the thing. I'm only here for a little while. Everybody, though, they present themselves like another George Patton, you know, or another, some kind of guy who, like, won the war, another U.S. Grant.
Right.
You're the dude who stood in the shoes for a while. You know, the Wonder Ball came, and you were there for the, you know, for the push-in, which, I mean, the Marine Corps didn't even lose 50 KIA for OIF-1. And he thought the whole thing's over, you know, whatever happens now, it's going to be somebody else's problem.
It's just, let me just tell you, the UCMJ seems to be another thing that we won't have people stand up and say and do the right thing, and then we're going to play charades with it. And
yeah.
It's just, to me, you see it in, I mean, it's in fucking disarray, you know, and it's just, to me, it's very disturbing as you watch people that don't have the moral courage. And then, I'm not going to mention any names, but then turn around to junior Marines and junior officers and talk about moral courage to them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember being in AWS back in 94. We had the head lawyer of the Marine Corps, I can't remember who it was, come and talk to us. He says, one thing we need to get rid of, a problem we have in our service. I'm waiting for, you know, too much dope or guys screwing female, junior female, you know, officers
right,
and stuff.
Right.
He says, we got to get rid of this personal loyalty thing that we have where people, and I'm thinking, that's what makes the whole goddamn thing work. You know, that's what makes it work. If the guy who's at 6th Marines in Afghanistan is loyal with the guy who's in 5th Marines in Afghanistan, the whole thing's got, you know, they got loyalty to each other. They got like a feeling of, I gotta help this guy. I gotta protect this guy if he's under assault. If they have that attitude, it can only be better. How could it be worse? Well, you know, because there might be an illegal thing and we need to be able to have, we need people who are, you know, who are jostling at the, chomping at the bit to rat their fucking, you know, their friends out.
Cause you want guys that will follow you to hell and back. Unless you're committing a misdemeanor or a potential hate crime, in which case then we got to rat them out. Yeah, what a weird way of looking at things.
It's not weird. It's stupid, right? I mean, it doesn't work like that. You can't. You would not see what you see. You would not see what you see when Marines, right, fight if we had a system like that. But it's just like I said. I mean, it's just all this whole. The whole kaleidoscope of the UCMJ and where we are today. And I'll tell you what, you know, one of the things that's going on is that the SEALs are not, they have the president backing now, right?
Yeah.
Those guys are going after the head guy in the SEAL.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing an insurrection in a service that is in absolute fucking turmoil right now.
Yeah.
And it's disturbing. It's disturbing because they're like, we're not having it.
Right. I mean, the whole thing is like, the thing is all based on the Constitution, 1892, right?
Right.
And then there's all this other stuff we piled on to help run the country that now, in their minds, have the force of law. As if George Washington said, you got to have so many fucking, ambassadors and lawyers and shit like that. And, you know, and the White House has to have so many, assistants, you know, specialists for this and that. And the National Security Council, which didn't even exist, the National Security Council, I don't think till the 60s, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Now they're like, this is part of our government. it's a bullshit part of our government, you know? Doesn't need to be there. It's there to help. It's not there. It doesn't have rights or anything like that. It doesn't have, like, authority. We got, like, all these rules and stuff, like every bureau, land management, all these different government things have been invented for this problem or that problem. And their rules and regulations have the force of law. They can shut your business down, you know, because you haven't been inspected for termite damage in the last.
No, I'll tell you what, they come from the Inchon Dwyer Group. You better have it strapped on, boys.
Yeah,
Inchon Dwyer Group going down for nobody.
Hey, man, if you don't have your stormwater abatement plan ready, I can hook you up with one. I'm good at that stuff.
Yeah, I barely have a plan for my accounts payable, okay? So fuck this stormwater abatement plan.
Well, you see, they got the SWAT team, you know, taking down 8-year-old girls from their lemonade stand for selling illegal lemonade, you know? So it's like,
what? I mean, come on, that stuff is so crazy. Well, you see people calling the cops, right, on kids that, I think there's a public health violation.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you shitting me? Do you have nothing better to do with your life than shit like that? But evidently they don't. Evidently they don't. All right, Timmy, any final words of wisdom from you?
I would submit to you that if the battalion commander who ran that formation where those rings got pinched, I don't know that he did that or was, but had he read Mike Etor's Trust-Based Leadership, he wouldn't have pulled that stunt.
I'm glad you said that.
Bet you money.
Mike's book, too. I'm reading it now, almost done.
No, it's cool. I got this thing in the mail, and this thing pops out, and it's Ledger Life, Mike Etor. Now look at it, I'm like, what the hell? This thing's like 500 pages. I couldn't believe it. And yeah, it's cool.
He
was trying to call through about 5 minutes ago to me.
Mike did?
Oh.
I'm going to call him as soon as I get done here, as soon as I take a leave.
Don't blow Mike Etor off. He's a legend.
No, my wife had a PhD in what the hell is it, leadership? I mean, it's executive, but she's got a PhD in this stuff, and she looks at it, and she goes, you know the guy that started Fidelis Group? I said, yeah, that's Mike Etor. I know him. And she goes, whoa, and she took it. I haven't seen it. It's been gone for a week. Yeah, but the little bit I looked at it, I was very impressed. And I listened to you guys yesterday.
Yeah.
And, man, I would submit to you that that is a nice companion to post-traumatic winter.
Let me tell you, Etor, though, you know, he tells a story about being a drill instructor, and he never had a hash mark while he's a drill instructor.
Yeah.
No, I know, 20 years old. Holy shit. And you know, when those guys showed up, when him and Dennis showed up, they started ripping through the POI tactics just like we had at IOC, and they did it without creating a whole lot of hate and discontent, remember?
Let me tell you, I don't know Dennis Green. Mike Etor, though, Mike Etor's no shit leader, man. And long before I met Mike, I had heard of this guy, Mike Etor. And I just heard about him, you know, as you stay in the Marine Corps, and we're in Quantico, so you cross paths with a fair number of people, and you hear about different people. And, you know, I never heard anybody say a bad word about him. I heard what a great leader was, and Mike is still that guy. And let me tell you, what's amazing, though, is he's written the definitive book about Marine Corps leadership. And I was, as we were interviewing him, as we were talking to him, it's like, it's amazing that this thing didn't exist before Mike. And it's an awesome book. And I got home from, you know, doing my, you know, my running around the world here recently. And, I see this package on my front steps, and I pick it up, and, you know, it's heavy, and I open it, and I see there's obviously more than one book in there. And I thought he must have sent me a half a dozen books to give away in this box.
Big opus.
And the thing, and there was three of them, one for me and one for each of my sons. And I was like, I pick it up, I'm like, holy shit, man. Etor's no bullshit, man. And then I started flipping through it, and I saw all the cool stuff. Some of it written, some of it never written before.
Right.
Right? Why you eat last, right? And all the other pearls of wisdom that we grow up with, but written down, nope, it's the oral tradition, which might be the better part of Marine Corps leadership, might be things like, I can fix a lot of things, I can't fix stupid, right?
Yeah.
Right? All those pearls, expect what you inspect. That ain't book shit. That's fucking real world, real life advice, mostly coming from the junior enlisted corps side of the Marine Corps, right?
Yeah.
Gunny on south.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and it reverberates, because I had his first squad leader, he was a platoon commander in Grenada and Beirut, as my company gunny when I was a company commander. And then later he was my first sergeant in the company I got after that one. And the guy was an ETOR guy, you know?
Right.
And if nothing else, we could bullshit about ETOR.
I'll tell you this about him. He showed up at the basic school. Everybody and his reputation preceded him. I wasn't sure who he was or what he looked like, but he hunted me down. I believe I was still a first lieutenant. I was an SPC. And he said, I heard you were in Beirut as a corpsman. I said, yeah, I was. He goes, well, tell me about it. And the only person that ever did that, you know, and I thought that was kind of cool. We sat there and, you know, filled each other in on some missing information that we didn't have.
Yeah, he would come to IOC.
And that was pretty impressive. Because I wasn't anybody. I was just a damn, you know, SPC.
You know, one time we had a breakfast, and me and Mel were out doing something with the junior class, so we couldn't be at the graduation breakfast. But the guest speaker was Colonel Ripley, and he had a book that some guy wrote about 3-3 in Vietnam, like, you know, a couple years of 3-3 stuff, called No Shining Armor.
Right.
And so he did the breakfast. I think he gave the book to the Leftwich guy. And so me and Mel come back. We're all cammied up and shit. You know, been out all night. And ETOR shows up, and we're in the bullpen, just the three of us. And Colonel Ripley comes in, and he goes, we start talking, the four of us. So me and Mel are sitting there with our mouths open, because these guys, ETOR and Ripley, are going through, they're bouncing stuff off each other. It was great. You know, I wish I could have taped it or something.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, yeah. It's one of those things that you wind up sitting there for, and you have to pinch yourself because, you know, Mike was, I mean, that's when the Marine Corps was not doing a whole lot of fighting. Right. And, you know, the Marines that went to Grenada and then Lebanon, I mean, they were as combat seasoned Marines. They had seen shit. Right. And, and they came back to tell the stories, and, you know, Mike's one of those guys. But you know what? The thing about Mike that is always, I always love, cause I was leaving IOC and going to school and then back to the fleet, when Mike showed up. And I think our time at the base school only, overlapped by a couple of months. He gave me, goes, hey, I want to give you something. And I was walking through tactics, and we had made, the guys that I was at IOC with had made a big effort to repair the relationship between IOC and the basic school. IOC right. was its own independent group when I got there. And we, you know, we were fortunate because we were some of the better instructors at the basic school, and we got a chance to study stuff longer and study how to teach longer. And it was mine and Scott Sobgas and Brian Fitzgibbons. You know,
right.
And Timmy was a part of it. It's like, look, we have a responsibility to go help those guys, right? And the guys, right. We have to know the guys who have our packages at the basic school, and we have to show them what we're doing and see if we can help them. And we did that, and I was happy about that. And then, you know, and then I took the idea for the instructor education program to Major Allen. I said, would you help me work on this and maybe walk this across the street? Mac, I'd be happy to. So we did that. And so I meet Mike. And he gives me this thing that I've never forgotten, I can't find it anymore. I don't know where the fuck I put it, but it was about this reconnaissance team up north of the DMZ that gets ambushed. And I want to say the call sign for the team leader is Brutus.
Is that Robeson? Or not Robeson.
Yeah.
He became a general.
Is that the same? Is that the same? But they take on an NVA company. And
that was three fingers, right?
Right, and they wind up, right? He winds up carrying one dude and dragging another guy on a makeshift stretcher. They find him. He's got no clothes on. He's got two weapons on him, and the dude he's carrying's passed out, and the other dude's, you know, passed out. And he had to. I think he killed two guys that were too wounded to carry. right? And so I Mike gave me this thing. He goes, tell me what you think of this. And I read it, and it was like, and so this is like in the 80s. No, this is in the early 90s. So there's no internet. And it was all letterhead shit. And so it was really interesting, but that was my first interaction with Mike. He's just a respectful, nice guy, smart as hell, but down to earth as hell, right? And
yeah.
And that's what his book is. His book reads like Mike talks. Plain spoken, boom, here it is.
Yeah, I mean, the part where he's a squad leader and he's got to deal with guys who actually are guys who came back in the Marine Corps who were Vietnam vets, and now they're disgruntled with peacetime Marine Corps, wanting to get out, but they still got 2 years left, and he's the fucking squad leader. He has a corporal, and he's got to deal with them.
Never been to Vietnam. Right.
Yeah. Right.
With all rights thereunto pertaining, but you still got to lead because ETOR. Yeah. You're
and in
charge.
Those days they could give a shit because I can, you know, I was one of those, not one of the Vietnam. I'm one of the guys showing up, and these fucking, I mean, not only them but the hoodlums we had coming in regular, they could give a shit about getting NJP. I mean, if you weren't a man, you couldn't fucking get people to do shit.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. So you would both? How many? Two thumbs up on Mikey Joe's book.
Yep.
Oh, I'm enjoying it immensely. And I swear to God, the two of you guys ought to be dovetailing off of each other.
Yeah.
Well, let me just tell you.
You'll fix what's ailing everybody.
Well, no. He and I were having that conversation about, you know, and I told him, like, we're traveling in parallel universes because all that post-traumatic winning is, right, it's the oral wisdom from our culture that I've taken and put together, you know. I didn't originate it, but I've heard so much of it in doing this program for almost 4 years that's what post-traumatic winning is. And now that I do it all the time, it's even richer than that. And I'm going to sit down in the next 2 months and I'm going to pump the book out. And it's not going to be 600 pages, though. It might be 120. I want it to be not intimidating. And so the print version will probably be, in my opinion, less than 120 pages, kind of like a soldier's load in the mobility of a nation. And then I want to do a digital version that you'd have on your phone that would include some of the audio clips that I included in the presentation, which would make it a little bit more robust. So, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Like, look, this stuff will set you free. You know, post-traumatic winning, if you embrace this wisdom, right, and you give it to other people, you'll do exactly what Viktor Frankl says is when you give your pain meaning, when you give your suffering meaning, you'll transform your life. Go touch other people. And I'm telling you, I have people, it's like, it's the craziest life in the world. So, but it is to me, like you said, parallel tracks. Parallel
tracks. I agree with you.
And you know what? And here's the other thing. You guys would be interested. I'd love to, and I'd love to, you guys to be a part of this. I told Mike, the follow-on class that's coming for post-traumatic winning in the next, I'm going to develop it over the course of the next 90 days is this, right? Nobody teaches us how to counsel, right? So, you know, and now more than ever, young kids come from fucked up families, a fucked up education system, right? And then they show up looking for leadership in the Marine Corps. Okay. So how do you counsel those guys? How do you do that? And so, you know, do we understand what are the best practices from the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marine Corps? What are the best civilian practices, right? And then and then distill that and say, look, and I can hear Zinni talking about it. Yeah, you know, I like that, but that's not the way I like it. I like it like this, though, right? And Zinni, right, he fucked with everything because he thought about it. He considered it. You know, he'd say, yeah, well, you know, I like that, but I don't like that component of it. So I stole something for the Brits. The Brits do this, and then they'll show it to you. And they're like, but look, you take a look at it. Do it the way you want it to from an informed perspective. But you got to read this, and you got to read this, and you got to read this. And let me know what you think. And I think we don't – counseling is weapons maintenance on your primary weapon, which is your Marines. And if you ain't doing it, and I didn't do it the way I should have done it, you're fucking stupid. You're not, and most important today is because they come from a society that's more adrift. If you're going to be the first fucking person in their life that ever did this with them, you know, that whole quote where I give a man a fish, I feed him for a day, But if I teach them how to fish, I feed them for life. You're going to teach these young people how to fish. And I was thinking, I was doing an outline this morning before the show started. And so I was thinking about this. I had an experience coaching high school baseball in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And I bring this kid in to pitch, and he could throw, but he never pitched, and he was a sophomore. And he didn't know how good he was, but I knew he was going to do good, right? So he comes in to pitch, and he's scared shitless. I hand him the ball, and I look at him, and I say, hey, look at me. And he looks at me. And I said, you're going to do great. I believe in you. I know you can do it. So the next day he comes to practice, and he does good, right? Next day he comes to practice, coach, could I talk to you? And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, like, what's this about? I'm like, yeah, what's up? And he goes, I just want to thank you. And I said, for what? And he said, for what you said to me yesterday. And now I'm trying to think, like, what the fuck did I say to him? I didn't say anything to him yesterday, right? And I said, so I asked him, I said, what did I say? He said, well, do you remember when you handed me the ball, you looked at me and you said, I know you can do it, I believe in you? And I said, yeah. He said, I never had a man say that anything like that to me in my life. And so the bar is so fucking low for young people today. It's a joke. And to help them feel so fucking good, and we can do it. And I think Mike's book is a part of it, and the Post-Traumatic Winning book is going to be a part of it. And but I'd love for you guys to be a part of that discussion so you could go do Post-Traumatic Winning. And then with the officers, staff NCOs, and NCOs, you're having this separate class on let's talk about how we counsel and how we do weapons maintenance on our primary weapons, because we suck at it.
Yep. You know, when I was a second lieutenant, I was thinking about this. I was awful proud of myself that I had in my platoon commander's notebook the hometowns. I knew where every one of my Marines was from, specifically so if a reporter, because we were the first MEW SOC, so we got a lot of reporters. If a reporter asked me, I could say, that's Lance Corporal such and such from Schenectady, New York. I thought I was Mr. On Johnny on the spot because I knew that much. And I look back now and I'm just, it's embarrassing how much better I would have been had I understood the purpose behind taking the time to find out where the hometown is. Because it wasn't apparently to tell reporters.
Well, do you still have your platoon commander notebooks? I'm like,
I do.
Oh, yeah. I can steal every one of my fucking Marines' identity right now. I have, right?
Oh, yeah,
right?
I got their socials.
Yeah,
I got their
social security number, home of record, what their pay was, what their allowance. In fact, the guy who's the fire captain, my Marine, who was Lance Corporal in 1984-85 when I was a platoon commander in 3rd Platoon of Charlie 1-5, he was up in Las Vegas, right? So I did post-traumatic winning. I did post-traumatic winning with the Las Vegas Fire Department last week. And or the training guys so they can make a decision on it. And then, so I look at him, I'm like, do you know that you had $429 in every paycheck that you made? And he looks at me, he goes, I remember I didn't make very much money. He goes, how do you know that? I said, I have it written down, man. You want to know, what else you want to know about you? But right back in the day, you had your platoon commander notebook, you cut the pages so they would layer right. And, right, and you had the whole thing lined out, and you know, EAS, right, allotments, married, home of record, you know, spouse's name, not too many of them were married back then. But,
that's really true.
Yeah, but I still have all this shit in my bookcase right here. And, but it's amazing though that, like, do you remember anybody ever giving you a class on counseling?
We had it. Yes, we had that class.
Who?
I don't
where?
God, thing about it.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I had been, you know, we didn't have anything else. When I was an enlisted guy, I knew everybody because we didn't have anything else to do except talk to each other.
Right.
About, you know, pushing on ship and stuff. And so, but then when I became an officer, I remember the big thing, difference in my platoon, is I had out of 37 of us that went on the MUSOC flow, like Tim was talking about, I had 9 married guys. And half of them, their wives left them while we're on float. And they got an apartment together, these 4 guys. And they had a picture, they had 2 rows of pictures. The first row was them and their wives married. Some of their wedding, some of them were wedding pictures. Then underneath were like these happy up pictures of them alone. Flipping off the camera and shit. And I thought this, and they were happy though. They're together, you know, just like they were on the fucking USS Spartanburg County, you know what I mean? And, but I remember knowing all those guys because, you know, it was just, it wasn't easy as an officer either compared to being, as an enlisted guy, it was unavoidable. But as an officer, you know, we lived in a, you know, we lived in the ward room or the stateroom type shit, you know, a couple of us, and then they were down in the fucking Berthen area, like the galleys of the Roman Republic and stuff. But it wasn't like an easy thing. You had to really make an effort. No.
Well, and again, if you don't, and I can tell you, there's still no class on it, and it's more critical than ever that you've got to reach them because they come from a culture that doesn't teach them this stuff. But if you'll sit down with them, and again, I go back to what the squad leaders of 2-8, you know, told their battalion commander, you know, do they want to talk to you about this shit? Oh, do they want to talk about it? They won't shut the fuck up about it.
Yeah.
So they're So people listening, you hear us talk about, you know, when we met Colonel Zinni or the fact that he would be interested, that they would talk to us about our careers, right? If you talk to them, they were like, well, hell yeah, I'd talk to you. But that's not our perspective. And put them in the same position, but a way different culture that's way softer, that doesn't prepare them. And like, is that guy going to talk to me? You know, he's a veteran of Afghanistan, right? Is he, you know? I mean, and so when you do give a fuck, when you sit down with them, when you do all that shit with them, right? I mean, you're teaching them shit that they wanted to learn. They jumped across the Grand Canyon to get into the Marine Corps, and now you're changing their life, man. And that's why it's so important. And that's what the way I end post-traumatic winning now is like, look, man, you've got every tool you can to go crush it, man. Just go love them and give a shit and listen to that Mattis quote all the time. If you don't love them, then you should get the fuck out. And what does it mean to love them? You've got to know them. You can't help them if you don't know them. So they've got to tell you their story. And then you got to say, what do you want to be, man? Are you in here for 4 or 40? If you're in here for 4, I got a blueprint for you. If you're in here for 4, what do you want to be? I want to be an HVAC guy. Hey, my brother-in-law's an HVAC guy. He lives out in San Clemente. Do you want to hang out with him on the weekend? Are you shitting me? No. I can hook that up for you. Now, are you going to have to get up that guy's ass anymore? No, because what's important to him is important to you. It ain't that fucking hard. But if you don't know them, it gets impossible. So, yeah.
It's not that hard, but it ain't that simple either.
No, you're right. It's hard. Leadership is hard. You got to care, and you got to get off your ass, and you got to love them. And that ain't, just like with kids, it ain't easy. It's stay on, stay off.
We talk to each other, and my mind gets all these memories I didn't even remember I had. Different things.
That happens to me.
Yeah.
No, you know what? That happens to me, and I remembered something that I'd watched as a kid, and when I talk about meditation. And I said, and I always say now, like, I don't mean like, bullshit Rafiki and the Lion King. Om Simba, you don't know who you are. I don't mean that. I mean, I was watching Tom Seaver pitch. And
oh, wow. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Right? He pitched for my dad in Cincinnati. Well, when Seaver would give up a home run, he would go to the back of the mound, he'd get the new ball, right? And he'd rub the ball, and then you'd see him take this huge fucking breath, and then he'd blow it out, and then he put his glove on, put the ball in the glove, and get up on the mound, and he pitch. And so I saw him do this, you know. And so to me, it wasn't like he just did that randomly, right? So I watched him, and I asked him, I said, hey, Tom, what are you doing when you do that? He said, well, first of all, I'm pissed that some shithead just took me deep. But I know this. If I don't get that out of my head and I get up on that mound, I'm going to hurt my team, right? Because I'm going to be distracted. So I've got to find a way to clear my head. So I go back there, rub the ball, and then when I take that breath and you see me blow it out, I said, yeah. He said, it helps me to get rid of it because that's I'm ejecting it from my body. Okay? Right?
The donut rolling curse out of himself.
Exactly. So he said, you know, sometimes I'll spit and that's a part of it, but when I turn around and go back to pitch, my mind's clear and I'm 100% focused on what I'm at the task at hand. And I don't know what I was doing one day, and like Jeff just said, all of a sudden, like, bing, like the light bulb turns on. I'm like, shit, that's what Tom Seaver told me in 1981. And then so now I put his picture up in the presentation, and I talk about what he told me. And so that's what I tell Marines. I said, that's what you've got to be able to do under pressure. When you feel it, you're seething and ready to explode, right? You've got to have a simple technique like he does. Take a deep breath, right? Maybe turn your back for a second. And when you blow that poison out and get back to the fight with a clear mind so you can operate at a higher level. That's what I'm talking about.
No. Absolutely.
Oh. Yeah, operational meditation.
I miss watching a first sergeant get in the zone you just described as he's watching the company form up and he spies somebody with muddy boots or something just atrocious. Something just atrocious. Because I remember you talking about the lack of formations and whatnot. I could think of 25 or 30 absolutely hysterical stories of first sergeants and company gunnery sergeants wearing guys out. Over just having the audacity to show up for the company formation in a uniform that wasn't serviceable.
Well, and these, Timmy,
it was
Timmy,
all
but,
you could do not to laugh. I just miss that. I miss that more than anything. I can't believe that's not a part of the Corps anymore.
Def Jam,
that shit was fun.
Def Jam Comedy Hour had nothing on that shit. That shit was straight up hilarious, right?
Absolutely right.
The humor of the enlisted Marine Corps is absolutely hilarious, right?
Listen to this one.
Hold on, let me just say one thing. A lot of times, though, that was a symptom of something else going wrong in somebody's fucking world, right?
Right.
That guy, right. Kenny's a pretty squared away Marine. All of a sudden, he shows up, he didn't shave, and he ain't talking. Hey, princess, come see me after formation. And you find out that my wife left last night, you know, I'm dealing with this and blah, 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 right? And as you said, Timmy, if the senior guys with that jaundice, like old gimlet eye, if they don't have that and they ain't seeing Marines every day, that's why you don't see that shit. And that's why you got to get them together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Jeff. I interrupted you.
Oh, well, you remember you go on air alert, you had to lay all your shit out, had to be perfect?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I started doing that when I was in 1st Marine Division, 1981, 82, we did an air alert thing. So we had the CG. I can't remember if he was a meth or what. Your dad would know him, Timmy, General Cooper. And he made everybody carry the card. I know him. And so the Band of Brothers, I think that's what it was. But we had a shipbird, and he wasn't in my outfit. He wasn't in, like, you know, he was in 3-5, but he wasn't in my. Anyways, this guy, he put out for his shit. He put like a, I don't know how his platoon commander let him get away. A pair of boots and like a fucking E-tool cover and that card. And the general goes, "Where's your stuff, Marine?" General Cooper. And he said, "Sir, one of the Band of Brothers stole all my gear." I'm thinking to myself, who let that motherfucker be out there with none of his shit? But
make him go away. Send him to the library, man. Like, we need, like, what's doing? That's like that.
Oh, yeah, I could have covered that one up. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is stupid. That's straight up stupid. That's I'm surprised in the old Marine Corps, right, that used to bury extra gear out in the back 40, that used to truck in other shit that we need from another fucking battalion warehouse. I'm surprised that guy would even got anywhere close to that formation.
EI Company, best equipped with 782 gear any other company in the Marine Corps. And why? Because they follow along behind the lieutenant companies who are dropping their shit left, right, and center.
Oh, shit.
How do we get a helmet? How do you fucking drop your helmet, man?
I don't know. I mean, I had a helmet. I mean, that's one of the great things about being an instructor there, right?
Yeah.
Right? You pick stuff up, and if nobody comes for it, you tell the SBC, hey, man, I've got this, but I'm not going to give it to you because I know you've got your own collection. So if nobody comes looking for it, I've got a helmet now. All right, thanks. I appreciate it. And then most of the time, somebody would come get it.
Yeah.
But, I've got a helmet in my garage, and that's where it's from.
Hey, we were in Korea, right?
Listen to this. I have my IOC helmet because how cool is that? Because I picked up a lieutenant helmet, and then when I went to leave, I'm like, I'm not taking my helmet apart, right? I've got the little, you know, mesh cami shit on it, right?
Right.
I've got my own sweatband in it. I'm not going to have to do this again, right? So I turn in a lieutenant's helmet. And then I, when I got my new one out in Twyron Palms, I didn't even take that out of the box. That can stay there. And then when I turned it in, they're like, hey, Captain McNamara, you didn't even use it. I'm like, yeah, I go soft cover. They're like, oh, that's weird.
You take it out of the box to turn it in, they say it's dirty, you need to clean it. It's never been worn.
Exactly. All right, that was Tim's parting words. Jeff, any parting words?
Nope, I just got to go pee, that's it.
Oh, really? you sound like a really old guy right then.
I am depressingly fucking old, man.
How old are you? Old.
I did the math reading Mike's book because I never really talked to him about it. I'm 1 year younger than him. So now I really feel old. If Mike's listening, I apologize, but, you know.
Hey, I got to throw this in about Jeff, though. I was doing the Scalpel podcast with Keith Rose, who's a doc in Corpus Christi. Jeff met him in Jalalabad. And at the end of it, he asked what I was doing. I said, tell him about All Marine Radio and the Lynch Kenny Hour. And he goes, is that guy I met, that Marine Colonel that said when he retires, he's going to sit on a rocking chair on his Porsche and eat a Viagra the size of a hockey puck? I said, that is exactly who I'm talking about. So
that's what's fun is
he remembered that one from way back when.
I got it on a stick like a fucking popsicle. And I got one on a rope in my shower, too. So it's
there you go. All right. On that, we're getting dangerously close to the edge. Thanks, boys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
There you have it. That is, and again, you heard it. Two thumbs up on Mike Etor's book. And let me tell you, those guys, and they would have no problem filleting Mike's book if they didn't care for it. But again, I'll tell you this: none of us are surprised that it is what it is because we know Mike Etor. We know where Mike Etor comes from, and Mike's a good dude. So anyway, interesting. All right, that'll do it. Don't touch that dial. In the first hour, towards the end of the first hour, I call Chris from Webster, Mass. Right? You hear me read, you know, his forecast. And then he tells his story about losing 250 pounds. And he had a little surgery, he's recovering. And so all the best to Chris in Webster. And congratulations. He's going to pass the Marine Corps PFT, he says. So whenever he does that, we'll have somebody film it, right? And we'll somehow or other figure out a way to stream it live on the All Marine Radio website, right? Because we believe in, right, covering important current events, and that's going to be a huge one. But no, the story, his story is amazing, and so want to wish him all the best as he continues to recover from a little surgery. So pretty cool stuff, though, pretty cool stuff. And then if you just tuned in at the end of this, which went a lot longer than it was supposed to go, about an hour and a half. The Lynch Kenny event, always interesting. And I was talking about the military justice system that, I mean, the three of us, we don't always agree. I mean, we disagree on a lot of stuff when we talk about it, but which is what I've always loved about my friends. But we agree that, like, what's going on with that system, man? It's busted. So, interesting show today. Have a great Thursday. And, the chef's not going to join us tomorrow, so I got to see if his wife is going to, because we're supposed to talk cheesecake. So, we'll see if that's going to happen. But anyway, have a great Thursday. All Marine Radio, over and out. Don't be back in the highlife again. You know, Joe knows this song. He hears this song fire up. He comes running in here, man. All right, have a great day.
Out.